Hello, halflings! Before we get into this week's episode, we have so many new patrons to shout out, yo. Like, we joined and did the big announcement with HeadGum, and there's a lot of people have joined the Patreon since we last recorded an episode, so we wanted to come on and do an extra special shout-out to all of our new patrons, because there is a few of you.
It's been a veritable avalanche of nadpoles.
So without further ado, let's thank some patrons. I'll start us off. We have Isaiah Aries Christian. Jamal Cookmans. Oh, Jamil. Cookmans. I'm so sorry, Jamil. We've been talking to Jamal today. We had a big business meeting with Jamal. The name was on my lips. But apologies, Jamil.
Jamal's really tightening the screws over here at TBH. We don't want that to reflect on you, Jamil.
Yeah, we do not want to get you involved in that. We have John Edwards, Jonathan Bogart, Rebecca Gabrielle, Anonymous Oliphant. Love that. And Ted Orbach. Thank you.
Thank you. Squeeze.
Yes. And I will continue the thanks with Michael Prudel. I hope I have pronounced your name correctly, Michael. We looked it up and that's what Google said. So if I've mispronounced it, blame Google. Next we have Nabaley. We have Astrid Adler. We have Travis Williams. We have Michael Bradley. We have Joshua Alkema. And we have Ananarama.
I love that one.
Ananarama is not a beekeeper because there is no bee at the beginning of Ananarama. Which is only funny if you've heard of Bananarama.
And I have got some more thanks to give to Afro Dutchman.
Hell yeah.
Eric McDaniel. Ooh. Grace Kelly Miller.
Whoop, whoop. Shout out to No Small Roles.
Woohoo!
Chantrell Every. Miles Barrett Duckworth.
Damn.
And Barney Fritz.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's so many patrons. Thank you so much, everyone. It's been a crazy week. It's been a crazy week over here at TBH HQ. And we could not be more thankful that you have chosen to come along for this ride. And I hope that you're enjoying all the goodies. There's loads of extra bonus episodes and things flying around on Patreon at the moment. We did a deep dive on the rest of the rogue classes. We've done a bunch of other stuff. So, yeah, definitely go out.
All the Mugatu watches, all the video versions. All the Mugatu watches. You'll get to see all of the things that I mimed and never actually said during all of the Mugatu episodes, because I keep forgetting that I'm actually not, I'm being filmed that it's mostly going to be listened to in an audio format.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
And also Luck of the Halflings as well. The Luck of the Halflings game that we played with Caldwell. If you haven't, you need to go and check that out now because it's absolutely hilarious. So without further ado, why don't we go ahead and get into this week's episode? Thanks, patrons.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
The younger Natty Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Unati!
And...
Jeremy Cobb, but Terry Gamble calls me... Cobblestones and broomsticks.
Cobblestones and broomsticks. That was nice.
Strong.
That was
strong
nice.
Entry.
Very strong entry.
Yeah, very strong.
We are super thrilled today to be joined by an extra special guest. We have the DM of Transplanner here. Connie, welcome to Three Black Halflings. How are you?
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragons.
Full prince vibe? Woof!
This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this
This is just a game.
That's disgusting, and I love it.
We're about to get into something real big now.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very well. How are all of you?
Couldn't be better.
Good. Very good. Very good. It's like my favorite time of the week, recording the show, and even better when we have awesome guests on as well. Connie, you are the DM for Transplanner, which is an amazing podcast, which you all need to go and check out. But we always like to start off these things with a little bit of like an origin story. It's what we always ask our guests. Just talk to us a little bit about how this all came about. I'm always interested to know.
Absolutely. So my GM villain origin story begins, I think, you know, I've always been like very much a nerdy kid, you know, very into books. Books were my first love. And then like superhero movies, TV shows, yep, etc. You know what I mean? Like the power fantasy of that. As well as like anime, you know, like really cool, you know, like the over the top, like super, you know, anime stuff. And then tabletop games actually found me at a later period of my life, relatively speaking. I didn't play my first D&D game. That was my first ever tabletop game, until I had graduated high school. I'd never been exposed to it, even though I'd always loved video games and very similar mediums. I played the occasional board game, but very much like a board game casual, you know, like Monopoly, Risk. Yeah.
Scrabble.
Yes, yes. I get heated during the occasional family Scrabble night. But
that's
yeah.
A word!
I know. And I'm like, look it up. And while they're looking it up, I'm like, is it a word?
We live in America. Don't use the UK spellings. I don't care if there's a U.
Yeah. No U's in anything.
Nope. And the different grays, how to spell gray.
Oh, yeah. I can't even figure out which country is which in terms of how that's spelled.
Yeah. I forget as well. But the USA spells gray with an A. Right? Is that how? I just made that up. Can I patent that? Is that a thing? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, England spells gray with,
An E. Yeah. Oh, we did it. We cracked the code. Yeah. But yeah, my first ever exposure to what D&D could be, I think. You know, I'd always like been aware of it, you know, from a cultural sense, like, oh, that's what nerds do in the basement, right? Like rolling dice and doing math, right? That didn't feel appealing to me. But then I stumbled upon a little podcast known as The Adventure Zone that a bunch of my friends were listening to. And I was like, what's this nerd-ish? So I started listening to it and I was like, whoa, you can do that? I was like, you can do that with a tabletop game? And I have to admit, I didn't know there were other tabletop games. I thought it was just D&D. And that was like the only thing out there. And like Pathfinder was like, it's like weird cousin, you know?
Yeah.
So after like GMing my first ever campaign, which was I learned so much from it. It was way too much. I started getting more and more into tabletop games. I started running a more long-term campaign in college with my then crush, now partner, as one of my party members. And it just sort of like spiraled outward from there. And especially after graduating college, I've been doing a lot more tabletop stuff, branching out from D&D, trying new systems, indie games, etc.
Nice. Cool. Very, very nice. Yeah, I think everyone's had the experience of like, oh, there's like so much more than just D&D. Oh, cool. Okay, yay. Cool. This is exciting. Well, this seems like a perfect time to maybe talk a little bit about Transplanner. I remember when we started Three Black Halflings, it really felt like there was like this, there was a lack of representation and there was a bit of a void, I guess, of that in this particular space. And I'm very interested to like, what was the thinking behind Transplanner? Like, was it about representation for you? Was it something different? Like, yeah, what drew you to the idea in the first place?
Totally. There were two primary draws, I think, for Transplanner. One draw for me as as an artist and as a creative was I wanted to tell a really cool story and share it with the world in a fun and entertaining format. You know, I graduated college with a double major in screenwriting and critical race studies, and so it's always been near and dear to my heart to be able to like share stories with the world. And you hit the nail right on the head, Jasper. The other aspect was representation. You know, I was like, well, all these like podcasts and streams, like they all seem first of all like very white, you know, and like also like very like cis and het. and there are like allies for sure, you know, and like the occasional like bisexual woman, the cast, right? But she's like always white, you know. Not to like name names, but like, you know, it's you do you, but like that was a lack I was noticing. And especially as a trans individual, I was like, Dungeons and Dragons and tabletop games in general are such a powerful tool to learn more about yourself, your own gender, your own gender journey. Like I am very much in the camp of, I think everyone should examine their gender, cis people included, like not just from the sense of like, could I be trans, but like just like critically, like what are the roles, you know? And I feel like Dungeons and Dragons and tabletop games is, they're such like a rich like playground for exploring those themes and topics in a safer way than you could like outside of play.
I think that's so true. We've spoken about it a lot, and in even in the ability to meet things in a very kind of like safe way, things that you wouldn't otherwise meet in like the outside world, or maybe you wouldn't feel comfortable meeting in the outside world. And I think for like, you know, we talk about it a lot with meeting different cultures and having and trying to find different, slightly different perspectives on certain things that maybe aren't as straightforward as they would appear in the real world. Like you dive into D&D and suddenly you can contact like African culture, or you can contact something like that. And I think it's absolutely the same way. I literally recently started playing a character who was non-binary, and I was like, I was so kind of blown away by what the, you know, how little the choice kind of impacted me as a player. And I was like, and it's something that, you know, that's something that I've been, I guess like analyzing, especially over the last year or so, is like my relationship to gender and how I see it. And so I definitely think that Dungeons and Dragons has helped me in that perspective, and I think can definitely help other people.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think like I tend to, because like being I presenting as female, been told most of my life I come off with like a really strong masculine energy, and I'm like, okay, what does that mean? Because I could probably like flip you on the floor doesn't mean that I don't like painting my nails and baking. Do you know what I mean? And I mean, I know I'm being really reductive, because that's not what gender comes down to, but like I think that I tend to really enjoy playing D&D because nobody questions the fact that my character is incredibly hench. Like, it's not even a question. It's just, it's fine. They're a fighter. They're hench. They happen to be a woman. That's cool. Like, there's no one questions that.
I'm sorry, what does hench mean?
Jacked.
It's like a British thing.
You don't have henched?
We have henchmen, but we don't have the word hench.
I didn't know that's what it came from. Wow.
I think they may be related.
Hench, and then you also get dench as well. Dench is more like if you're Judy? Like really cool. Like
you're
like
just making stuff up at this point. Like you can say anything.
Genuinely, there's like a whole song, literally about Judy Dench being Dench.
Oh my god,
it's a great song.
It's a really great song. It tickles me.
And let's not forget Fench. And of course, Gench.
Okay, now Jeremy is making stuff up. That's for sure.
Fench refers to a person who dresses very stylishly, and Gench refers to a person who's very wise.
Okay. There we go.
Well, I'll accept it as canon. I'll accept it.
Now.
My next character is going to be called Fench.
Judy Fench.
Judy Fench. Connie, we are big fans of world building, and all of us now are homebrewers and have homebrewed settings and etc. And I'm very fascinated by the world of which Transplanar is set, and the fact that you very explicitly say this is like a non-colonial anti-orientalist world. And I was like, that I think going in like being like, this is what we are avoiding, there will be none of this in here, you know, there will be this, you know, I think it's a very interesting way of building world. And I was just really fascinated by like how you went about building that world, and then like what or did you feel like you needed to like research things, and like how would you go about if one of our listeners wanted to like set up a world like that, or they were like, yeah, I want to contact a world where we don't have to deal with this, you know what I mean? How did you go about that process?
Totally. So basically, after I'd gathered my players together, we had like a session negative one, like pre-session zero, where we talked about what kind of campaign do we want. Like, do we want this to be like local level? Do we want this to be like up to like a level 10 D&D campaign? Do we want this to be like an epic level, you know, campaign? They're all like epic level. So I was like, oh God, okay, cool. I'll do my best.
Strap in.
Yep. And then they also had a... you know, they had a lot of questions about the world, a lot of desires about the world that also like that meshed with mine. A common thread throughout all my players was they wanted this. Endake is the name of the setting I eventually came up with. They wanted this world to reflect and represent cultures that are not typically represented in tabletop games in ways that felt respectful. And not like fetishistic and like not reductive. Right. To like use that term that Unati used earlier.
Yeah.
So you're totally right, Jasper. Like, there was a lot of research that went into that because I'm like a 1.5 generation Chinese American is how I would identify myself. So like one of the eight primary provinces or countries in Endake, is modeled off of a Song dynasty, like China, you know, and I'm drawing very much upon those aesthetics, upon those like cultural values, upon like any like military conflicts that might have been happening at the time for that one particular province. But the rest, you know, my players expressed a desire for it to be diverse, you know, so like not just, you know, it's just like fantasy China, but they wanted like a palette of various other cultures for them to be exposed to and for our listeners and audience members to also be exposed to. So almost every single province or country in Endake is based off of a different real world culture, whether it's a period of Japanese history or indigenous Hawaiian culture or medieval Indian culture, stuff like that. And I do my best to do the research. And it's almost been a year. I think our first episode came out June 2020. So a couple more months, three more months, and we're coming up on our 1 year anniversary. And I have learned a lot about the trials and tribulations, joys and rewards, epic highs and epic lows of world building. World building a setting with cultural elements that do not necessarily belong to you. And I would say that there are certain things I've done that I think everyone can and should do, no matter what your race is, whether you're white, you're black, you're Asian, whatever, it doesn't matter. And one of them is to interrogate how race, the fantasy race, works in your setting, right? So at character creation, I made it very clear we're not going, this is like pre-Tasha's, like we're not going to be using race-based ability score increases and like race-based like features even.
Sure,
There were some like specific like homebrew considerations based on like the specifics of the world. For example, I disallowed dark vision just due to how the setting is set up. Nighttime is very bright, so no one has evolved to need dark vision. So the only like creatures that have dark vision are like monsters in the world. So that's like one like particular thing that's specific to the setting. But other than that, I was like, y'all have to build your characters in terms of race through like third party modules, you know, and I provided like options. And the primary one was James Introcaso's rethinking race, I think, or customizing D&D races on his World Builder blog that I really, really enjoyed. It's basically a point buy system for like buying ability score increases and like stuff, you know, like wings instead of like just all, you know, Eric Coker get wings, you know, you could have wings if you're a human, who knows, you know, sure, or like fire breath. It's not just a dragonborn feature. Like you could be a gnome with fire breath, right? And like having that be a really fun and like modular way to construct your character.
That's very cool. Yeah.
Yes. So number one, like to, if you want your games to not perpetuate harmful, like racial stereotypes or like further real world racism through like in-game racism, right? Fantasy and real world race are, you know, there's so much overlap and gray area when it comes to that. I would my first recommendation is just like rethink how you handle fantasy race at your table, you know, and I highly recommend, you know, check out those two pages on Tasha's that they give you know, recommendations for how to fix. And there are tons of indie creators out there who are making cool content for that. But before I like keep going on, like I'm curious to hear the three of y'all's like thoughts about this as world builders yourselves.
Well, actually, I was going to say, Jeremy, like, you've developed something that you do in terms of, like, NPCs, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Which might be worth throwing out.
I think that dealing with race in D&D is... The way that you deal with it, I think, should probably be slightly adjusted depending on who you are playing with. So if I was DMing for an entirely white group, I might deal with race in D&D in terms of the world itself slightly differently than if I was to deal with like a group where everybody was of color. But in both cases, that's basically because the players themselves are going to have certain things that they are comfortable with or not comfortable with or used to or not used to. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, for some people of color, they may not be okay with depictions of fantasy racism in general in the game, which is absolutely fine by me. However, if I was going to play with like an all white group, it might be cool to have their whatever race they all play essentially be minorities in the world so that they get an experience of like... You know, but now it's not what I would say, the first thing I would suggest, but it is, I think it changes up. Essentially what I'm saying is tailor what you're doing to your players. In general, I would say I'm not a huge fan of just including fantasy racism in a world just because I feel like it's often very cheap and easy. And as you said, Connie, it tends to replicate real life, stereotypes and tropes. Yeah. And I mean, you can see that. If you watch videos of Baldur's Gate, the Baldur's Gate 3 that's coming out, there's like depictions of like, oh yeah, all the goblins sound like this. Like, and it's like, well, I don't know if that does something to your larynx or something when you're that short and you look like that, but it's kind of like, this feels overly reductive. Like, in the game that I'm running right now, I think that you were referring to, Jasper, it takes place in a huge city that is incredibly cosmopolitan. And so I explicitly said that there is no discrimination, really negative discrimination in terms of, that is race-based. It is entirely class-based. There's like a lot of classism, but, no racism. And, because it's an area where it's a melting pot of different cultures, and also because I was lazy, I instituted a thing whereby I created a chart of all of the races that exist in D&D. And whenever an NPC shows up and I have not decided this NPC's race because maybe it doesn't matter or whatever, I will ask the players to roll on the chart to determine what person's race is. So it's eliminated any bias that I have. And it is because what it ends up doing is like some stuff. I mean, they're upcoming race combos. So and Unati plays in the game. So yeah. I can't say what they are, but some of these are like, you know, I never would. In fact, I told Jasper one of them. Never would have associated this race with this specific kind of person. This is pretty interesting. And so I think that is an effective way of eliminating bias on the GM's part. And I think it needs to be just a conversation. How you're dealing with these things needs to be a conversation and a frequent and constant interrogation of how you are approaching these topics. Because as you said, repeating myself and repeating you again, Connie, it does have real world implications. Like you are making stuff up based on what you already know. That's just how brains work. So if you have any preconceived biases, you're just going to bring them into the game without realizing it.
And then in turn, that will reinforce what is already at the table amongst your players. So that's also particularly unhelpful.
Build a little racist stew that you're all just sitting on. A bunch of potatoes just sitting in your little racist stew.
Do not disparage the potato like this. What has the potato ever done but show us love?
It's potato wonderful. Slander.
Yeah.
Yeah, we will stand for this. Jeremy, you're off the show.
Bye, everybody. I'm gonna go chop up some potatoes and burn them.
He's still going to eat them, though,
really,
because even
delicious,
burned potatoes
are delicious.
Yeah.
Potatoes in any form are delicious. I think that you're right in that when building these worlds, I tend to find that it feels a little bit more kind of organic for me, in the sense that I try to create a very lived-in world, and then try to acknowledge then if something comes up in my planning, I'll try and go, oh, that feels like it could be like that could be a little bit problematic, or I look back and all my my NPCs, and I'm like, oh, am I going like the other way here? Like, am I like actively being like prejudiced against any white character that appears like in my campaign? Because that's definitely happened at one point in my campaign, where just every NPC I described was black, a female, and just, I was just like, this is unbalanced. Like, this is super unbalanced.
It's just a world of black women. What can I say?
It's just a world of black women.
Heck yeah.
And literally every single NPC that was in any position of power was female. Every single one.
They reproduce asexually. There's no...
Honestly, yeah. I don't see a problem with that. It's funny that you say that, Jasper, because every single white NPC I've introduced has been a villain or like really ominous.
Yeah.
Like very sinister.
Yeah, I mean, like in my campaign, this is essentially set in late 18th century Southern Africa, when the English came to all of the white people came to colonize Africa. So only the black people can do no wrong. There's obviously like, you know, obviously I'm still engaging with the political tensions that existed in the time amongst Zulus and Ndebeles in general. But big bads are all grey-skinned paladins, you know what I mean? Like elves.
They're
all just elves. Oh, so it's like, yes, the whitest of the whitest
of
the race.
I like that, like, elves. We as a tabletop like community have agreed that like elves are white people. So like elves are like the hoity-toity like aristocrats.
Yeah, they agreed. Yeah. They decided. They took on the trope. They cast themselves in the role.
They dyed their
hair white. They did the whole thing.
You're right.
We had nothing to do with
this was your choice. You made this choice.
I think my favorite depiction of a fantasy elf ever was, if any of you are fans of Dimension 20, in Fantasy High Season 2, they visit one of the characters' grandparents, and it is by far my favorite. Like, he's so ethereal and out of touch that he literally doesn't understand words that they say. So they'll be like, I'm a teenager, and like, teenager. teen age, and like he can't say anyone's name who isn't elvish. He just can't, he flat out can't pronounce it. And he's like, my name is Gorgug, and he's like, Georgia. it's just great.
That is very funny. I think that, like, but I think acknowledging your own biases though can be like something that you can either like then change and rectify, or you can like live in it, because
lean in.
Also, there is a part of me that's like, as a someone who identifies as black, I'm like, I grew up on all white literature and all white, you know, fantasy things. So if I want to make an all black adventure, that is fine. Like, I have the space to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, you know, and I can give that gift to my fellow black players who have also had nothing but, you know, all white versions of these stories being told. Do you know what I mean? We can have some of these stories too that are exclusively, you know, black or whatever.
Totally.
When Lou Wilson was on the show, when he played on Wagadu, he said that was the first time that he'd ever played with an all black group of people, with even a black DM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think every DM he'd ever played with had been a white man.
That says something.
I'm not surprised, but it is one of those things.
Yeah,
I can actually speak to the contrary of this. I, for the first time the other day, had a white DM for the first time.
Oh, wow.
I was like,
how was it?
Oh, okay. Did you like it?
Hey, I was like, it was different. No, it was good. It was really good. It was a genuinely really good, but I remember just being like, I was like, oh, yeah. That's super weird. Normally it's always a black person talking to me. Like, okay,
there you go.
Cool.
He takes off the mask and it's me.
Yeah. Hey, there we go. Okay. Whew, I can relax.
Gotcha.
Yeah. but no, like it can be a tricky thing to deal with. I don't know if you've had this, Connie, but like, I feel like it's a very, it can be a very tricky thing to deal with, because even as people of color, you can identify like some really, really like unhelpful like stereotypes and things that exist within yourself, or like things that you've been taught. And like, you know, I knew, I realized like last year, there was like a whole lot of stuff that I internalized through growing up in like a mostly white neighborhood. And like, that it, I like, especially then confronting that like in a game and a world where you control, you're like, wow, damn, that's really laying it bare for me right there. There it is, black mm-hmm. and white. I wrote that, like, and it's problematic. Damn,
that happens all the time for me.
Yeah,
I think it's something that I like to call like the burden of representation. I think especially as creators of color, like as a Chinese creator, I'm like, am I like orientalizing myself, you know, in this moment? I feel like I have so much responsibility as someone who, you know, I'm not even like famous or anything by any stretch of the imagination, but I have like some semblance of some kind of platform,
yeah,
right?
You're anyone more, with
any number of followers. I feel like I have so much responsibility to like.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Like, do this shit right, you know?
Yeah.
This always makes me think, like, I wish creators of color, I wish, you know, Black and Asian, Indigenous, you know, Latin, like, GMs and world builders, I wish we would, like, cut ourselves some slack, too. You know, because white people are out there, like, just, like, doing whatever.
Living their,
you know,
best
and they
lives.
Get, like, $500 a month from their Patreon, just, like, yeah, doing, yeah. like, whatever the fuck
the
they're
bare
doing.
Minimum. You know?
And, like, at this point, I'm just like, you know what? Like, so what if I, you know, introduce someone with a bowler hat in a world where England doesn't exist? You know, like, yeah. so what? Like, that's a minor yeah. fuck up, right? Like, I'm yeah. just gonna do yeah. it. What if I mention? So what if I mention spaghetti? You know, like, yeah. I can't always be pulling like cultural foods all the time. Like, that's, you know, that's also a lot of like brain space for me, right? Because yeah. you know, sometimes yeah. I'm hungry yeah. to think about pasta.
That it's so it like that's for doing Wagadu, one of the hardest things is having almost an for me I have an almost entirely Western frame of reference, and so mm-hmm. like it would be so much easier if I had grown up in an actual African country so that I had a frame of reference where I was like, oh, and we're throwing in this and we're throwing in this and we're throwing in this. So instead I have to like actually specifically research of pull up
yes.
lists of names mm-hmm. from each culture that we're presenting, look up stuff about the culture, look up stuff in the book. Like it's a lot more work. But it's also like, I feel like if I were to include something from my original frame of reference, it would be like, oh no, I've betrayed the setting and I've imposed my own Western standards on this game. And it's just like, man.
Yeah, it's,
it feels like a no-win.
but I think that like part of the thing here is that like we as POC creators hold ourselves to a higher standard in the sense that like the fact that we're thinking about it means that we're already very unlikely to make the kinds of mistakes which would actually be hurtful to someone. And we are ready to hold our hands up and be like, "Whoa, I got that super fucking wrong. I'm so like, I'm sorry. Let's rectify this. Let's." Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Which to some is degree, where it's I also think... the fandoms. I was actually, speaking of the Adventure Zone, I don't know, Connie, if you have looked into the controversy that erupted over the depiction of Taco's race. But it,
I remember that. Like Taco being a Latinx person, right? I think was.
Well,
was
that's the thing. They never, the McElroy brothers, there's a character named Taco in the Adventure Zone in the first arc.
And it's literally a Taco joke. It's like
he literally just wants to invent tacos in a fantasy world.
Yes, that's his whole thing. Yep. Yeah.
And they, a bunch of the McElroys, I don't think ever really described what these characters looked like all that much. And so they left because they wanted to leave it open for the fandom to imagine the characters however they wanted to. And be amongst some of the fandom, they decided that Taco should explicitly be a Mexican person in order to pay homage to the heritage of the taco. However, from the McElroy's perspective, they felt very uncomfortable about having created a character named Taco whose entire character revolved around building a taco.
And like, to canonize him as like a Mexican person?
Yes. And so they were like, when we actually release... because they released a comic book version of their campaign.
I think Taco was
originally, they were all three depicted as white characters. But then the fandom got really angry again because they're like, how dare you make all three of these protagonists white? Which is odd to me because all three of the people playing are white. I don't understand why that's a problem, but whatever. People got really angry. So then they were like, oh, okay, wait, we're going to change this character to be dark skinned and we're going to have this character be green now. Like Taco becomes green and I think Merle becomes dark-skinned, and people are like, wait, but Merle's a deadbeat dad. How dare you make him dark-skinned? And Taco's green? That's been used at times as a Jewish stereotype, a negative Jewish depiction among the Nazis. How dare... And they're like, well, look, if we try to make Magnus dark-skinned, well, Magnus always likes to rush in and get into fights, so we can't make him dark-skinned. If we make it became like a thing, if we make Taco dark-skinned, then we're back to the racist stereotype thing. We can't win here.
It's a comedy of errors.
Yeah. Have you ever seen, do you ever used to watch Fairly Odd Parents?
Yes.
There's like an episode in Fairly Odd Parents where he just like doesn't want to stand out anymore. So he wishes for like everyone to be the same. And I feel like it's just like, we have to get past the point where like we basically will these. Because effectively in that, the only way they could have won is if every single person in that campaign was a gray blob of the same height.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just homogenize it.
They're all just a Greendale human being.
Yeah. That'd be so horrendous.
But it's like, even the post he wrote is like, Griffin wrote an apology post that is just, sorry, go ahead. I cut you off.
No, I just think, I didn't know all the intricacies of that controversy, but it just makes me think like, I wish fandom had responded by being like, great, this is some really cool content made by like four white dudes. What's other content out there? You know, if they really cared about representation, could they have listened and reviewed other podcasts by people of color? You know, like, I wish fandom would do that more.
Take this energy you have and use it to help people and who are doing the thing that you like and the thing that is important. Yeah. Don't just rail against the person that got it wrong because they probably didn't even, like, do you know what I mean? They didn't mean it. They've apologized for it.
The thing about that is, I don't think it's a problem necessarily if you're four white dudes and you want to play characters. It's honestly, it's respectful for you to sort of like stay in your lane. You know, I'd be like, I don't know what it's like to be a black person, so I'm not going to try to pretend, especially for like an audience, right? Like that.
Yeah.
just
it's a bit
wow.
it's a bit like you know, I've seen criticisms of certain shows being like all white casts and stuff, and I'm like, to a point I get it, but also I'm like, well, you can't just like get a black friend to be in your show, or get like a, you know,
we're
what I mean,
back to tokenism.
Like, yeah, because yep. that's just all that's like that's not I would rather you just have your friends on the show that you want to have on the show. Don't call me up because I haven't spoken to you in a few years and be like, hey, do you want to be on this show because
Twitter's mad at me
because Twitter's mad at yeah. me that none of us are brown. Like, it's just it's like, you know, yeah, it's a bit of a like a lose-lose situation, I think, in
yeah
that.
Rather yeah. do a full-on wash day for my 4C hair. Like, no.
Yeah.
I will say, I think it can be interesting. It also, because, let me start this. So, saying, I think it's a very valid point that you made, Connie, about a person maybe not understanding the experiences of another person, and so not feeling comfortable playing as that person. However, I think to some degree, if we agree and we talk about it ahead of time, and the setting itself is different enough from real world, we're from real life, that it, like, say you are, say somebody wanted to play a black character, but they themselves are not black. But in this world, there is no history of racism against black people. They just really liked conceiving of this character as a black person. And the character is not some black stereotype. It's like, it's not stereotypical in any way. They just really liked the idea of playing a black person in this game without divorced from the cultural context. Now, I would not have an issue with a black person playing a black person that's divorced from the cultural context. So I don't feel like I would have an issue with a white person in that case playing a character that's divorced from the cultural context, because their blackness is now less relevant to who they are than it would have been if it was a setting that is a real world setting.
Yeah.
And I think, and so I think if you are going to, I think that applies mainly for me, at least in a real world setting that's closer to, that has rules, like where you are actually playing a character with an established real world heritage, I think you need to have a conversation ahead of time, being like, hey guys, by the way, the fact that they're black does not, like, their people were never enslaved, there aren't stereotypes about them just because they have dark skin, they just happen to be dark from a different part of the world, like, that's all it is. I think you can get away with it in a case like that, and it can actually be like, it can bring some diversity, because it what it also does is it humanizes, I think, those groups of people, because you now no longer think of a black person as a person who has to fit all of these categories, because really at our core, any human race really just refers to slight differences in a population. Maybe your skin is darker, or your hair is curlier, or you have, your eyelids are shaped differently, your bone structure is a little thicker because you grew up in a cold part of the world, or your bones are thinner and longer because you grew up in a warm part of the world, you maybe don't have body hair. Like, that's really what it comes down to. And I think culture 100% matters, but I think once we're able to view each other as people rather than just a representation of culture, because obviously you can go too far and erase culture, but I think if you are able to look at a person as just like, oh yeah, this is a person. This is a person with feelings and thoughts, then it can be helpful as well. It can be positive in that regard.
I think a lot of the time, though, a lot of the backlash is usually coming from a place of, like, disempowerment and lack of parity. Like, if we were having this conversation and we were also simultaneously at other tables where, you know, lovely, well-meaning, you know, cishet white men are dominating the space. And if all those doors were wide open and there was parity, then it would be so much easier to then be like, right, everybody have at it. But until we get to parity, we are going to have this problem and people are going to get upset. However, can we try and get upset in a way? Like, if you have issues with racism, then, you know, like, I don't buy certain hair products anymore that are marketed towards Afro hair because they're owned by white people. Now I have to actively seek out companies that are owned by black women by black men. And then I go, well, that's my protest. And it's for me, it's comfortable, it's simple. It just means I take my money out of here and I put it there. And then I don't have to sit on the internet screaming.
Yeah. And this, exactly, you know, is exactly like you said, Connie. Just like take that energy and find other creators that are doing it right and are nailing it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Don't scream at them and then be like, but I'm still going to carry on watching because, you know, like it's just like a really great show or whatever. Like, no, choose one.
Pick. You can't have your cake and eat it too, right? Like you really can't. You've got to start making some hard decisions.
Yeah, if you're going to call someone, if you're going to call someone racist, you can't carry on listening to their content if you don't think racism, if you think racism is bad. Like, that's just, like, I don't know. Maybe that's too black and white for me, but I'm like, that seems like a simple choice.
Do you know what I mean? Like, just take some action.
Yeah, if you're really
real
angry
actions.
Over the racism, and like, because obviously, I tend to think that everybody is racist, like, just in general. That's just how I think. And I don't look at it as the people are intentionally having negative thoughts about other groups of people. I think it's just that humans, as a species, are inclined to be tribalistic and to create stereotypes about other groups of people. And therefore, any situation where you have multiple groups of people, they are going to tend to develop a bunch of stereotypes, negative stereotypes about each other. And unfortunately, those are always going to be a law, or if there's appearance differences, those appearance differences are usually going to be part of those stereotypes. And we live in a world in which that is exactly what has happened. And there's been centuries and centuries of violence and oppression, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so unless you're growing up in some country, like you're like one of the Sentinelese people who has never had contact with someone outside of your group of people, you probably have a bunch of racist thoughts that you grew up with. And so you just have to interrogate them. So I think when it comes to and actually change them. So if it's even if it's something like racism that you accuse a curator of being racist, I think it's the way that the manifestation of the racism is also worth looking at. And in the case of the McElroys, even if we were to say that them playing white characters was wrong somehow, I feel like the nature of the backlash was maybe inappropriate. This was not where they were not. It's based on, I mean, the level of inclusivity that they try to have in that show, because they go out of their way to try and be inclusive.
They do.
It's like, why are we acting like they deliberately created a full on all white paradise in this game? Like, that's not what happened. I think the method, as kind of tying in with what you guys are saying, is also, it needs to vary according to what the nature of the so-called offense, depending on what, in any given case.
I just want to
go ahead.
No, you go. I was going to say something stupid, so you go.
Great. I have four thoughts about this conversation. My first thought about the McElroys again is, I think another reason why the backlash maybe was so huge and ginormous is that the fact that it was a podcast and there were four people who were a part of it, sure, there was like a production team, but it removed the obscuration that usually happens with media, right? Because if we see a piece of a TV show or a movie, it's very obvious whether or not it's diverse. Just look at the actors, look at who's talking. But what is less obvious is the makeup of the writer's room. Like, who is actually, who's writing the lines coming out of this Asian person's mouth, right? Stuff like that. And like that, but there's just none of that. It was pretty transparent for the McElroys. People were like, four white dudes telling these stories, had their own reactions, you know, coming out of their own whatever. My second thought has to do with why specifically this topic has come up a lot for me in the past couple of weeks, like going on panels, talking about it, other podcasts, this idea of like, can white people play people of color, right? Like, are white people allowed to play black people in their tabletop games, right? And I think that question is maybe the wrong question to ask. You know, instead of framing it as, can I do this? Am I allowed? Do I have permission, you know, to do this thing? Maybe think about, like, how would you doing this thing, right, make the people of color in your life feel, right? Like, you know, just think about like, oh, if I'm going to play this like Asian person and I know Connie, ooh, how would Connie feel about me specifically doing this and performing this character in this particular way? And also, I agree with you so much, Jeremy, that games can help. Like, it's a question of empathy, right? Like, that's a big topic that always comes up. Like, oh, the games are a great way for us to learn empathy for other people, right? And for other struggles that we're not a part of. I agree to that kind of with a caveat. I think that games are most useful when teaching you things about yourself, right? Even if I were to play someone of a different race, I'm not learning what it's actually like to be black. I'm learning what I think it's like to be black, right? Mm-hmm. Because I can't turn black. You know, that's not physically possible. So that's my second thought. My third thought is, I just think that every time someone watches like Critical Role, they should go up like a Patreon tier for Three Black Halflings, like for every episode. I just think that needs to happen.
I endorse this message.
Endorse that one. Yeah.
And I have completely forgotten my fourth thought. So Jasper, take it away.
No, that was brilliant. I was just going to, I just wanted to comment that Jeremy was making a really incredibly nuanced and well thought out kind of like point, as Unati was struggling not to sneeze. And it was one of the cutest things I've ever seen, because Unati went to sneeze. I caught Connie notice it as well. And then I nearly laughed because of that. And then once the sneeze didn't happen, Unati started pushing her nose like a little button to try and like turn it off. I don't know.
And it worked somehow.
Yeah, there was no sneeze.
Is this something that consistently works for you?
You gotta do what you gotta do. If I touch my nose when I want to sneeze, it kind of stops.
How'd you discover this?
I don't know. I just touch it and then it stops.
Oh my god!
Is it like when babies start to cry and the parent cries back at them and the baby just stopped and is like, what?
What?
Is it like that? Your nose is like, ah, and you're like, hey, wait, and the nose is like, what? What?
You just distract your nose enough that it forgets it needs to sneeze.
I didn't think anyone had noticed. I thought I'd done it.
Oh, we all saw. We all saw, Natty.
Jeremy was fully in the flow, like just like weaving his way around this point. me and Connie were just like, oh. is it gonna
It was a whole like subplot. It's like suspense. This is one of those things I wish that like the audience could have seen it, so there could have been a sense of like, is she gonna sneeze? Is he gonna finish the point before she sneezes? What's gonna happen? Is she gonna be able to hold it in?
I was trying to be respectful to your argument.
Oh, I appreciate it. That was brilliant. That was so brilliant.
That's awesome.
Cool. So, Connie, one thing that we always do with all of our guests that we have on the show is we ask them for a Tales from the Table. Now, Tales from the Table is, in our context, in TB Halflings context, is like the stupidest, most like chaotic, ridiculous thing that happened at a table that you've been in. Something that just really springs to mind. We've had some doozies, so we always ask our guests to share them because they're always very entertaining.
Wow. You know, I am in a very interesting position because I feel like something wild happens every like session of like our stream. Yep. So I'm like, I really have to think about this. Let's see. So there are several different dynamics that happen, let's say, in the particular party that I run for Transplanar. So we've got Manaya. She is a very, hench? Right? Half orc fighter.
Is that the American equivalent?
Swole, buff.
Yeah, swole
ripped,
would be the
jacked.
Yeah. Hench.
Yeah.
Definitely. She loves to throw our Osimar into battle. Like, she'll just pick up Oka and, like, throw him. And Oka can, like, unfurl their wings, right? Because they're an Osimar. I just, like, dive right in. And they've taken on quite a few monsters with this strategy.
Technique, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
They reproduced the fastball special.
No, you're not going to hurl Mooty next. Please, can you continue before you give on going to cover any more ideas?
You can throw him away from danger. Maybe you can throw him away from danger.
Yeah, not into it.
Yes, away from danger. You're really squishy. Okay, he's squishy. Away from danger.
But yes, you can definitely use that. I encourage you to. Please do that. Something else is our Eric Kokura is sort of... He's on the run from his former employers at this like research laboratory, and it's sort of like a running joke that he's got this like watch strapped to his wrist that basically was a parting gift from his former employers that will explode if he tries to take it off, and it allows his employers to track him. So there are quite a lot of jokes about this bomb watch, as well as the fact that he's a really bad dad. because he's on the run, so he's abandoned his wife and his child to be on the run and be a fugitive. Yeah, it's interesting because our show is actually pretty, I would say it's maybe 70% serious, 30% goofy. Sure. So any big moments that come to mind are very, like, emotional bombshells, as opposed to like, oh, this hilarious thing we did. The most recent one I would have to say is our party was fighting this like memory stealing monster that could turn invisible. You know the classic D&D beastie. And one of them was hit by its memory stealing power. And I gave the player a choice. I said you can either take a lot of damage or you can tell me what memory you give up. Right. That you present to this creature.
Yeah.
And she chose to give up the memory of her and this NPC that she's had this like, ooh, are they gonna like, ooh, this is like cute. She chose to give up the memory of them having their first kiss. So I'm really excited for that relationship to like get super awkward. Like Rev, who's like this buff drow woman, this hench. I have a lot of hench women in my game now that
a
I think of
it. Should.
The MILF syndrome, as I like to call it. So I'm very excited. Well, they're, hot older women. They may or may not be mothers, but that's my GM signature if I had to have one. I'm excited for that, to twist that knife in my character's back that she's offered up to me. And there's like a lot of, other emotional bombshells when it comes to like feelings of like, of being exiled, of like obviously like missing parents, like being a bad dad, stuff like that. So that comes up quite often throughout every episode and is sort of like each character has their own like their glass shard, lodged into their heart. And this campaign is their way of trying to unlodge that shard through the power of friendship. as a classic D&D situation. But Transplanter is also very, I realize this isn't exactly like a tale from the table, like this is getting into
more. This is great. This is so great.
This is just a quick overview of the
everything going on. Yeah. It's a very personal campaign to me as well. Because I really do believe that the best and most interesting stories, right, no matter the medium, come from your own personal experiences and things that you can authentically speak toward. And that oftentimes has to do with culture and race, especially as people of color. But also, like, I struggle a lot with, like, depression. So like the monsters I introduce in Transplanar, like, are sort of like representations of how I feel when I'm like depressed, like they're, I call them like the empty monsters. Right. And they seek to make everyone empty. Right. In this world. That's like a kind of minor spoiler, but I also feel like it's been pretty obvious. So if my players haven't figured that out at this point, I'm like,
well, that's on you.
I wonder why all these monsters are so weird and void like, and I feel so awful and get nothing when I feel nothing when I look at them, all these clues.
Well, now you know.
Connie keeps accidentally calling them the Dementors. I don't know.
Why does that happen? But yeah, if I had to have like a parting thought for the end of this episode, I would say for anyone, but white creators especially, like, when you're thinking about like, how can I make my games more diverse? Like, it's great, if you're a GM to like, cause you control every other NPC, it's great to like throw in diverse NPCs, but also like consider how I would contest that, impulse, because I feel like that impulse comes from a place of, European fantasy has done too much. I don't want to do another Western European fantasy, game, or I don't want to do another Western European fantasy campaign. I want to do something interesting, something different, right? How can I represent cultures that aren't my own in my game, as a white creator? I would say one, don't play D&D. Or if you do, buy a setting or buy a supplement that was created by a person of color, like modeled off of their own culture, right? There's like tons of content like that out there. Or play a setting or a system that was made by like a person of color that is related to the cultures you're interested in exploring. Like, I believe, is the Cub and Caterpillar, is that, the Wagadu Chronicles?
Yes, the Wagadu Chronicles setting. Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. So check that out. There's tons of 100%. Other stuff coming out for sure. My other piece of advice or my parting thought would be like, dig inward, right? Like, some of the best work, hands down, like across all artistic mediums I've seen from white artists is when they dig inward instead of trying to represent a story that doesn't belong to them. You know, like my partner is white and they ran, their setting was so good. They ran this really cool, like three shot, like D&D campaign where it was, they described it as like Dust Bowl chic. And they were drawing on their own experiences of growing up in rural New York, you know, like classism and poverty, you know, being poor. And like that had like some of the most compelling plot hooks and interesting characters, you know, that I'd ever witnessed in a game. And they were drawing on their own personal experience and they were white, but it still felt very different from like classic, like medieval European fantasy. It still felt different and fresh, you know? So yeah. I challenge, and I invite white creators and all creators really to look inside you. Look at the, what are the specific stories only you can tell, right? What are the specific settings and characters only you can come up with and bring that to the table? Because that's what we need more of, right? Not just like another white person being like, I want to play a Japanese samurai, you know? Yeah. So like that's sort of my,
ooh,
my close thoughts.
You know, oh, that was rude. I had flashbacks of that film.
Which film was this?
Isn't it what, The Last Samurai or something? What
oh
was
my
it
God,
called?
Yep.
Oh, you mean 47 Ronin?
Yep.
Oh, that was Keanu Reeves. That was a separate. That was a separate thing.
Yeah, The Last Samurai. Was that guy real? Was that a true story?
I don't think so. No, but
anyway, I honestly love it so much when we have incredibly eloquent guests on. Yeah. It just makes this show so much better and these episodes so much better. Yeah. And honestly, Connie, that was an amazing parting thought, and I really counsel everyone to go and check out Transplaner. Connie, where else can we find you? Like on the internet, is there anything coming up that you wanna plug? Tell the halflings all about it.
Heck yeah! You can find me personally on the internet on Twitter at @ByConnieChung. Bi as in the authorial sign off, not the sexuality, though I am both. And I also run the Transplaner social media platforms, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitch. Transplaner RPG. Twitch is where we stream Saturdays at 3 p.m. U.S. Central Time every week. Upcoming projects, I am currently working on converting Transplaner's past streams into a listenable podcast format, like edited down with sound design. So keep your eyes peeled for that. That should be dropping in June 2020 to celebrate our 1 year anniversary, our first podcast episode. I'm also working on a PBTA hack, using PBTA as the engine, a hack of Masks and Urban Shadows, as well as several other PBTA games. A new tabletop system called the God Killer, the God Killer RPG game, where basically you play someone who can kill gods in a post-apocalyptic fantasy setting, sort of like Mad Max meets the Raven Tower situation going on here. So if you're interested in like dark apocalyptic fantasy, stay tuned for that. And yeah, those are my upcoming things that I'm excited to plug in. And thank you for having me here.
I need this in my life now. I want to kill gods in a Mad Max world. That sounds the coolest shit I ever heard of. Oh my god. Thank you so much for joining us, Connie. Thank you to all of you who listen. Don't forget that you can find us on the social medias at TV Halflings. You can also find us on Patreon as well, which is patreon.com/TV Halflings. And we will see you very, very soon. Look after yourselves. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
Bye.
Bye. Meow.